Hi, John.
Hi, Merlin.
Hi, how's it going?
I spilled coffee on the couch.
On your green, your nice green couch.
And on my pants.
Well,
I spilled coffee on my couch and my pants. And I'm
luckily,
not,
pants aren't furniture. So I think
they're not. And you know, these are special blue jeans. So I guess the coffee actually adds to the patina.
That's true. What are you going to do about your couch? Is that something where like I've tried to adopt this thing in the last couple of years, a phrase that I don't know. I'm not sure the best way to summarize it. It was something along the lines of food is for eating. We don't say food like, well, you know, like that whole thing that some people do. We'll save every leftover without any intention of like when they're planning to eat it. And so then and I know you're an eater of these things. Now I know I'm not talking about you. I'm talking about somebody else who saves half of a goddamn drumstick that nobody ever wanted and nobody ever will want. So now I have half a drumstick plus a nickel bag.
I see what you mean.
And like food is for eating. But the
wait
corollary,
a minute, a nickel bag?
I'm sorry, it was a poor choice of words. A lid of chicken.
Okay.
It's a little Coke bottle cap full, not full. It's not that much chicken left, but you save it.
Mm-hmm.
Poverty mentality. But food is for eating. So like, if you want to eat cake for dinner, eat cake for dinner. Like, you're not saving. Like, eat the good piece. Use the good scissors. Like, all of those things. Wear the pants you want to wear. Like, do all of those things, because what in the hell? Because if you're like me and you're from a modest background, you tend to think, oh, we need to save it for something. And it's like, what the hell are you saving your life for?
Well, you don't do that, though. You don't save half a chicken. That's somebody
else. Well, A, I don't, but B...
You're calling somebody else out in your household.
Me?
Who's saving half a drumstick?
Well, but what I'm trying to say is, like, I don't know, that... I think the reason I think that is relevant is like, or, you know, like I say, life is for eating, food is for eating, like stickers are for putting on things. Like, don't save your stickers, like put them on things. And like, I don't know. I just, I'm not sure what my point is, except that couches are for living.
Okay. All right. No, you
sometimes
got
sometimes somebody passes out and takes a shit on your couch. Now, maybe that's not the most, well, sorry, let's start over. How nice is it? In your world, I'm just throwing this out as a better analogy. In your world, how important is it to you to keep if you have a doormat by your front door, how important is it to keep that really pristine looking? Right? It's kind of a rhetorical question.
The doorknob or the doormat, you're right, should be dirty. But like, for instance, I had the floors refinished when I bought this house.
Oh, right.
And then I have a dining room table and it's got chairs around it. And around the dining room table, the chairs have marked up the refinished floor. And I don't know how I feel about it. And partly I don't know how I feel about it, I think, because I'm only 2 years in or 3 years.
You can't help but have that feeling of like, didn't I just fix it? I just made this nice.
And maybe 20 years from now, when the dining room chairs have marked up the floor so much that it like looks incredible.
Yeah.
But right now I'm in that middle period of like,
you know, I know exactly what you mean.
You know, it just kind of looks dirty around the table. It's not. And the thing about this couch is, it's got a.
I wasn't criticizing your couch. I just mean like, is it? It's just that like it's so difficult to keep things nice like in the world. And maybe I'm just capitulating to entropy. But I do increase, especially if it involves like let's, and again, this is like one of those things where you're like, oh, you know, don't cry over spilled milk, right? Like if a thing has already happened and it wasn't intentional, like there's nobody to press charges on. Like, you probably didn't mean to spill coffee on your couch.
Did your mom put plastic on your couch?
No, but all the Catholics did.
You knew you knew the kids that did, and they were all Catholics.
Almost all Catholics. Catholics, I'm not going to get into ethnicity, so don't ask.
No.
But let's just say there's a lot of people that like to put the plastic on the couch.
here in the Northwest, it was the Chinese families that had plastic on
the couch. No kidding. Ni hao.
Yeah, what do you know?
Hmm.
Huh. Well, isn't that something?
We've learned a lot today, haven't we?
but the thing about a coffee stain is that, it just...
It's frustrating.
You know, it is. It's frustrating. I don't think it's going to stain, but I'm sitting here with a wet... I got a little bit of a wet spot.
Did it happen, your pants and the couch, they both happened this morning?
Well, what it was I sat down to... You know, I did that eBay store a couple of weeks ago or a month ago. And it was really fun. It was really great, but It was really hard.
And this was you putting up for sale a lot of your extra large clothes?
Just a bunch of stuff, yeah.
Yeah.
And so I wanted to do it again, but it's like, it's a lot of work to put that stuff up. The people that do it all the time.
It's a lot of work.
Well, you know, it's a lot of
this
work.
This is why I'm only, I mean, off the record. Yeah. Not off the record. I'm not stupid. This is why I don't want to do t-shirts for us unless somebody else does all the work.
Yeah.
Because, like, if you've never, maybe you did this back in the day, or maybe you had people, but, like, trying to do, like, different, like, t-shirts, like, for a band, t-shirts, let's even say in two colors,
yeah,
right? Or two styles and different colors. And, you know, I know in retail they call this a SKU. So, like, you have all of these different things that you need to get right, and you need to get it into the envelope, and you need, oh, did you check? Oh, no, this one has to go to England, so there's a VAT tax, and there's, like, all of that stuff, and, like, that is really deeply not in my wheelhouse. And that, it seems me like you don't have it that as bad, probably, but you still got to buy a bunch of puffy envelopes, right?
Well, when we used to do it in Bandland, it was before there was any kind of internet.
You just sell it at merch tables, right?
Well, but you'd get a design from a friend. A friend would design your t-shirt. You'd take it over to the screen printing shop where you knew the people that worked there. You walked into the warehouse. You were like, here's the thing. They put it into their gizmo. They made some screens. You watched it all getting done. There was a tactile element. It was like my dad going to visit his pharmacist. It just felt like, oh, this is another thing I have to do as I walk around the town.
It's a compounding t-shirt manufacturer.
Yeah, you're just like, these are my friends.
They're in front of you, artisan.
And they're going to make this, and I'm going to buy them from them at $4, and I'm going to sell them to other people at $9. And it's just like, it all makes sense. And now, because it's computers, it's like, that's just something I can put off till tomorrow. But with the
benefit of a 90s rock t-shirt, at least in my experience, as a purchaser of many and manufacturer of a few, is they're available in exactly one style, which is white, cotton, and large. It's a white, cotton, large shirt. And if you want anything else, go find a different band. Because if you're going to go on, especially not, we didn't do this, but you know, you've been through this. Like, you have to probably think to yourself, like, how many extra smalls in pink?
Ugh.
Or whatever. Oh, you know what I mean? Something that's or green, like weird green.
We thought about this for hours and hours.
You get to the end of the tour and all you have left is like three pink extra smalls. And you're like, why did we not? We sold out of large or extra large white in the design we knew would be popular. We sold out of that in a week.
Yeah.
And now all we have is gray. We could have made so much more money and carried less stuff if we'd had a smaller range of things.
Oh, the great one is that you go out on tour and for 3 weeks, everybody that comes up is like, do you have any double XLs? And you're like, sorry, no. And they walk
have somebody airship you a bunch of extra double.
Yeah. And then you have 200 double XLs made, and then you don't sell any of them.
Here comes the lollipop guild.
Just like, great. But so I will come home and I'll say, I'm going to put some stuff up on my eBay store. And that'll be at 10 o'clock in the morning. And at 1 a.m., I'm still trying to put stuff up.
And you can't fuck it up.
You can't fuck it up.
Right. So I mean, anyway, like, you can't put it in the wrong thing.
Oh, it's all, and there's so many things, and it's a bad UI. But anyway, this morning, you said, hey, I need an extra half hour.
Yeah. Because
you woke up early. I had a disco nap. And so I sat down on the couch and I was like, I'm going live with my eBay store today. It's all ready. I just have to push go.
Oh, dang. Am I taking you away from that right now? We can keep this short.
No. This is more important. But I put my coffee cup next to me on the couch, leaned it on my pants because I had to get on the computer and go ticka ticka ticka.
I'm sympathetic.
You know what I mean?
I do. You put things where they don't belong.
Yep.
And then things happen.
I made it all go live, and I was very excited. I was like, the eBay store is up, and it's my second round. And then I don't know what I did. I jumped for joy or something, or I wiggled my butt, and the coffee went off, you know, and all of a sudden it's pouring coffee everywhere, and I'm like, nah.
Yeah.
So right before the show, I just spilled coffee.
Sorry. No, I'm sorry. That's a frustrating circumstance.
It's just what it is, and you're absolutely right. Food is to be eaten. Couches are to be lived on.
I mean, I'm living. I worry that when I say that, it sounds like I'm saying that somebody who does not just immediately agree with me is a prude. Or is anal or something. And that's really not what I mean. I just mean as a way of, I've discovered that for myself, a good correction for myself in life has been, it doesn't mean, God, I'd argue with Syracuse for half an hour about this recently, that like, just because there's a very strong feeling one way or another, like good is not the opposite of evil, hate is not the opposite of love. And just because you don't love something doesn't mean that you then have to hate it.
Right.
You love it or something else.
You love it or something else.
Well, I really believe this. And I think part of the American or the Western, you know, obsession with a binary for most things is kind of what's part of this. That guy's pure evil. You think he's pure evil? What is that? What does that mean? Apart from like, he doesn't have to answer for his actions because the devil made him. When you say something, so you're saying, what, Merle, you're saying he's good? No, I'm saying it's something else. Maybe he's either pure evil or something else. And I don't mean The Record by the Kinks, which is terrific. But isn't it possible that just no matter how strongly we feel about something, the answer is something else? So to me, the answer is not pristine or nothing else. The answer is not garbage or nothing else, you know, as in like wrecked or something else. It's just that context matters in things. And did I ever tell you just real quick? Can I tell you a quick anecdote? It's pretty quick.
No, I would like it.
Okay. My paternal grandmother, my father's mother, and the very wonderful man that she married after my grandfather died, they lived in the same house out on Boomer Road in Cincinnati for my whole childhood. And that was going to grandma's house was like, that was grandma's house. And
do you know what Boomer Road was named after?
No. Do you?
No,
it's funny. Like, you know how it is? You know, you've got all these cobwebby things in your brain that hang around that you don't ever reprocess. It wasn't until like last year that I reprocessed the name of the road my grandmother lived on. Okay, Boomer.
Well, so anyway.
No, but I feel you. But like, and grandma, and for that matter, my, you know, grandfather, they were both like, oh man, like, I mean, everything was always like squeak. Like everything was so clean and so perfect and nothing ever moved. The time that my grandmother was in, this is actually a sweet but revealing story. The time that, one time my grandmother was in the hospital, I made her a little Play-Doh, like a little Snow White, because I had a little Disney Play-Doh kit when I was like 4. And I made it for her and she loved it and she held it together with needles until after she died. And then I brought it back after she'd passed away, you know, years later. But that thing never moved. Nothing ever moved. Everything was always exactly where it was supposed to be. You know what I'm saying? You've been in houses like this, like, let's be honest, like the couches of a certain religious following, right? Everything's always exactly like this. There's never any splatter next to where you're making biscotti, like none of that kind of stuff. Well, that's how my grandparents were. And one of the ways that they addressed their concerns about the grossness of the world and wanting order, I don't know if you know this word, they had runners. So like
runners.
So like you got your wall-to-wall carpeting, and then like, you know, you have a doormat outside, people wipe their feet on. You might have a mat inside. But then in a lot of houses, a surprising number of houses, at least in the 60s and 70s, there would be what we used to call a runner, was just a piece of plastic 2 feet wide. It came in a roll. Not so different from like what your office chair might go on, but it had little, you know, teeth on the bottom. But you'd roll this, and so from their front door of their house and the living room to the door into the family room, which is where we always spent all our time, there's a runner. They were in other places too, but why do we do that? Well, we do that to keep the carpeting nice, right?
Right.
And so you have a thing there, and it's like, oh God, what a great idea. This will keep our carpeting nice.
It's carpet on a carpet.
As long as nobody ever walks on any part of this that's not the runner. Because on the day of our Lord, Easter, and I think maybe on Christmas, but especially on Easter, how do you know it's a very special occasion? Grandma will pull up the runner.
Why is today different from all the other days?
Because of the bitter herbs. And Grandma will pull up the runner. And John, do you want to speculate what 364 days of having a runner between the front door and the family room? Would you like to tell me briefly the beautiful, like nearly Christ-like thing that creates?
Is it an opposite?
It's a 2 foot wide, absolutely immaculate. And you know what it ends up doing?
A little of an otherwise used carpet.
Why don't they make the whole house out of runner? But so it was funny. Like, you're like, ooh, you come in, you'd be like, honestly, people come in, Uncle Bill will go, ooh. Like, wow, the rug's really clean there. That's nice. But you know what it really does is it makes you feel like the rest of your house is just shit. Because there's this there's a 2 foot wide area, 12 feet long, that is very, very clean. It's only been exposed to the air you know,
every Christmas,
27 times, right? Ever. But it's a funny thing that I think about sometimes when I think about life is for living, stickers are for sticking, food is for eating, is that, like, I get why she did that. And I'm not trying to drag grandma, you know, but it was kind of funny that on the one hand, it is so sort of tightly wound and of that time. Like, you knew people in the 60s, 70s, you knew people, you know, in their 60s and 70s, in the 60s and 70s, who did stuff like that. Sometimes that means putting plastic on the couch that I guess you never take off. Is it for resale value? Like, I don't know, but the kind of the funny part, you know, family to family, when grandma's in the kitchen, is like, God, it's so weird when she picks that thing up and it's just the clean spot. And it really does kind of then merely make the living room carpet, which is, let me be clear, as immaculate as a non-runner covered carpet can be.
Right. Also, extremely clean.
Extremely clean. It's just the blinding Jesus-like clarity of this 2-foot-wide, you know, what lives under the plastic. It's risen, you know?
Well, you know, and I probably, in a house like that, wouldn't have been allowed to take a coffee into the living room in the first place, no matter who I was.
Well, okay, so first of all, so that's so funny that you would say that real quick, is that number one, well, I have to reject the premise of your remark because we only ever sat in the living room. The living room was basically like what people used to call a parlor.
Oh.
Right? So the living room, we only ever sat, I think we opened Christmas presents there sometimes. Well, before the kids were born, I don't remember opening Christmas presents there, but I've seen photos. Right? Uh-huh. You only ever go there when there's like fancy company.
Right.
Right?
Otherwise, you would just be getting the plastic all yellow from...
Are you kidding me? Look at you walking all the places that aren't plastic. Beautiful cherry wood, entire dining room suite was cherry, beautiful red. Oh my God. But you follow, right? And like, sure, we'll have coffee. The minister's coming over. And so we'll have tiny little coffees and grandma's going to sit there very nervously and hope that nothing happens. But no, you don't just truck around with a drink. They had little socks that you would put onto glasses.
Socks?
They had a set of what I can only describe as a sock. Imagine something that you would, I'm so remembering this now, in different colors so you could remember whose drink is whose. They had these little socklets. Imagine like a little piece of, you know, like, you know, knitted stuff that's the circumference of a glass and 3 inches high. But they also did still have coasters. And that's just for the family room. And I'm not trying to make grandma sound tightly wound.
No.
This is how it was. And again, let's go. First principles, Clarice. My father was born the day before the stock market crash. Okay.
Yeah.
My family.
You had to make that couch last.
Yeah. And like, it's easy enough for somebody like me to talk about, you know, abundance versus poverty mentalities or something else, if you were to actually ask me. What if it's neither? What if it's something else? But anyway, no. I was raised with that, with what my family universally all refer to each other, never themselves, as string savers, which is a term.
String savers.
That's, and you say, oh, that guy's such a string saver. And I mean, you know where that comes from, right? Which is,
yeah.
So people, like, everything that anything is, I noticed, I was watching The Godfather 2 yesterday, and when De Niro gets fired from Abbandando's grocery, Abbandando wants to give him the groceries, and he won't accept it, and then he does the sweetest thing, he goes and he buys his wife a pear, and he's going to give, I don't think she has a name, he's going to give his wife a pear, and then I notice he, like, takes the wrapping off the pear and kind of puts it up on the coat rack by his hat, and I'm thinking, you know he's going to reuse that wrapping.
Yeah, he saved the wrap.
My grandfather used the same paper towel for lunch and dinner. My maternal grandfather. Right. So why are you a string saver? Because it's the Depression. A lot of kids on our street are dying. And a handful of kids that I know have starved to death. Like, and guess what? Is it okay with you if I save some string? Because you never know when you're going to need it. But then you never also then in turn... learn to purge yourself of the things that you really don't need. And so everything just becomes about privation and cleanliness and like all of those kinds of things that are completely understandable to me. But like, hey, is it cool now that grandma died in 87? Is it cool if I'm not like that in 2024 at some point? Is my family.
I've been struggling lately with consumerism.
As a concept?
No, personally.
Uh-huh. I'd love to hear about this. I would absolutely love to hear about this.
I am not flush with cash right now. I'm in that situation that a lot of self-employed people are where it seems like every time I get $5, it all has to go to pay multiple fees, taxes and fees.
Yeah.
Extra charges.
I understand. Like there's some, special offers.
Yeah. A lot of stuff has to go out, a lot more than you think.
Yeah.
And so I'm not in any situation, where I need anything. In fact, the opposite. I not only do I not need anything, I super not need anything.
I want half of the stuff in our house to be gone.
Half. Exactly.
Half. And I don't care. I don't even care what half. You can cut the house in half. Yeah, I don't care.
Any half.
Any half of the any half of the house. Just I want 49 to 51% of our house. I'm not picky. 49 to 51% of our house to be gone, and I don't care who's sad about it. I don't care who's sad about it, including me.
Yeah, and that, and I'm the same. And also, I don't have the money to be frivolously buying things.
Well, like consuming, or like that kind of consuming to fill a hole that we all do from time to time. Whether that's, they say in a bad economy, sales of things like lipsticks go up because it's a little thing a lady can get for herself as a treat. But like, you don't need to like fill a hole by just going out and buying an Oculus head thing or something or a Tesla or whatever.
Well, here's what I'm struggling with. Because I do not think of myself as someone who does that,
right.
Except that for 40 years, I've gone to thrift stores as a way to pass the time. And, you got an hour to kill, going to a thrift store,
Yeah.
You wander around. Because
thrifting is also a process of checking in. You got to gut your places, right? And you know which places are like pretty good. And even if you're not like an expert on the day of the week and stuff like that, you still check in and you go, yeah, it's the same. It's the same sports coats as last time. Or, oh my gosh, I notice a lot of new stuff has appeared. Like once you get good at thrifting, right? Isn't that part of it is like checking big back time. In?
Yeah, absolutely. But it's tied. And I wasn't really aware of this because again, of the kind of the depression way of thinking where it's like, oh my God, this thing's so cheap, I can't afford not to get it. Like, I'm going to add this string. This string's practically free.
Oh, man. I need a box for my string. I made my own.
I made my own out of string.
I made a string box. Blink,
and
blink.
So you get that, the false sense that you're actually, by buying things, you're being thrifty. And all of that is tied now in my head in this kind of messed up way where I find myself needing to go and I don't need anything. And I really am just filling a hole.
Shopping as in to purchase or to like have something to do while you're outside the house?
Well, no, like
retail therapy, they used to call it.
They do, and I've always thought like, oh, well, that's for other people. That doesn't apply to me. But I'm finding that my little heart right now is, for whatever reason, sort of fragile.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And I'm trying to, I don't know what. I'm trying to heal myself somehow by buying a bunch of shite. And in particular, like guitar shite. Because I can justify it, right? I can say, oh, well, I need...
It's for my work.
I need to go to the guitar store, and I need to... Because it's for my work, and I need to... while I'm here, I should probably get some of these and probably some of those. And it's this little... It always seems like an insignificant amount of money until you look at it, and it's like, well, wait a minute, that's real money. Like, it's not insignificant. You and I both make our living in this weird way. We don't get a paycheck and go, burp, burp, burp.
I think about that sometimes when I order like Instacart, and which I do a lot. And I think to myself,
what is Instacart?
Sorry?
Can you explain it? What is Instacart?
Instacart is a tech service where they have relationships. Well, first of all, they have a bunch of like freelance drivers. It's like, like Lyft or Uber, except it's for grocery shopping. And so they have the usually quite close relationships with local grocery stores and chain grocery stores, and like all they are up to date on stuff like supply and stuff like that. So you go in, you add things to your Notional cart, it checks out, and then your shopper goes and gets it for you and delivers it to you and communicates as needed with you about things like replacements and stuff like that.
Actually goes to the grocery store and is in communication with you, so as, they're like, oh, needed, they don't hopefully. Have that mayonnaise, not, they have this mayonnaise.
Yeah, but I was just thinking, like, you could also think about it any other way. Think about it as Lyft, or think about it as any, like, you know, gig economy thing. And I don't know, I just had this kind of weird sinking feeling where it's like, that was worth $20 for me to not have to do, and that was worth $20 for them to do. Do you know what I mean?
Right.
That's which is kind of a, I never really thought of it quite that way before, but you know, when you buy something, this is why stealing is unusual, because when you buy something, one person's making money, one person's spending money, at least on that transaction. You've had a meeting of the minds, you say this is for that, and it's like, there's just been lots of times in my life where I could spend this or I could make this. And there are times in your life, it doesn't have to be total privation, it could just be you're trying to like grow up and you go like, well, I need to change the direction of these numbers for a while. I need to like, I need to become more mindful without becoming like a shrew about it. But I need to become more mindful about how many things I decide I need to spend money on versus how many things I need to make money with. And you're right, the kind of stuff we do does make that a little complicated and not dependable in a lot of, not that anybody's life is dependable, but like it's, there's something sort of uniquely, the more independent you are, the more likely you are you're successful. And the more successful you are, the more likely you aren't actually independent.
Whoa. Say that formulation again. The more
the more independent you are,
yes,
in your job, and you could look at that in lots of different ways. I think there's a very important distinction between like independence in how you work versus independence on like there's what you do, how you decide to do it, how you get paid for it. But like even just to be like an indie troubadour or something, like that's independent. But yeah. I think it's important. It's something that's in that. What did you call it? My document. What did you call it? You had a funny name for it. But like one of the things I say in there is that just keep in mind that when you're doing creative, independent creative work, be aware that very little of the creative work is truly independent, and very little of the independent work is truly creative. It's easy enough to get a gig economy job working for somebody else, you know, so to speak, but you probably won't have much creativity in what you're doing and how you do it. And the more that you're doing something that is creative in what you do and how you do it, the less, like, if it is making you money, the less likely it is to be, you know, sort of truly independent.
Interesting.
That's my theory anyway. But you
I
know,
think, the, I think what you said just a minute ago that, you know, that this was worth $20 to me not to have to do it.
Yeah.
And
yeah.
It was worth $20 to them to do it.
Yeah, yeah.
That's really exactly what I was trying to articulate.
Really? Because it's almost like, you know, they say energy cannot be created or destroyed. It's right. Like, or for that matter, in the queer community, a lot of people say we've all been spending the same $20 bill for 20. Everybody's just always giving each other money to help with stuff. I love that phrase. But so that makes sense to you.
That's the Portland economy, right? There's $150 in the whole place, and somebody pays this guy to give their dog a groom, and then that guy goes and, you know, buys some trucks at a skate shop, and then that guy
makes
goes
a picnic
and gets,
table.
Yeah, right.
But like, yeah, that's just I don't know, like a lot of things in life, I think a model can be a useful way to like bracket an idea about something, and it had not really occurred to me before. And like I say, I do it a lot. Yeah. I don't own private jets. I don't have a car. I don't like, and one reason I don't have those things, the main reason is I hate those things. But the other reason is that like
the main reason you don't have a private jet is that you hate it?
Yeah, I do. It's very bad for the environment. You know what? When they make a jet, I almost have a bumper sticker here.
School lunches. Yeah.
And the Air Force, has to hold a bake sale?
Yeah, the Air Force has to hold a bake sale to build a junior high.
Oh, when Tesla makes a plane, I'll buy it in a heartbeat. Big fan.
Oh, see, that's because you're one of those.
I love that guy. Oh my God.
Yeah, I am. Well, the thing is, I look at this green couch and I'm like, okay, now you've got a divot in it from where you've been sitting for a long time. Now you've got a coffee stain on it. At what point am I going to start to tingle and go, you know what, I need a new couch? And the answer is, I don't need a new couch. The couch that we had in our rec room at home was a couch that didn't even belong to us. It, when it was made, it was originally sold to someone else with bad taste, and that person probably gave it to somebody else.
How did you end up with it?
Well, it was like my mom had a boyfriend, and the boyfriend. The boyfriend owned a rental house, and he got the couch from the rental house.
The one you like. You know, Syracuse says pretty frequently he's always complaining about the condition of his house. Not complaining, but, you know, complaining.
Yeah.
And when he says, like, almost all of his furniture, according to John Syracuse, came from his late grandmother, and they've still got it. But, like, one thing in an unusual way, I'm super sympathetic about is the constraints of a house.
Right.
It was like, well, you know, to other people with a different house, they go like, well, why don't you just ... Oh, great. That, you know, somebody's really smart when they begin a lot of their statements with, why don't you just? Well, yeah, why don't you just... Oh, that hadn't occurred to me. Why don't I just? Except for this. Except for our floor is not that strong, and we can't do this, and the only place to fit the entertainment thing is in this corner. And you get this, right? That wherever you live, you practically need user documentation for your house to explain how to unlock one door. Could be a one-page document, let alone how of your decisions, and I'm not saying they're always right, but we have our reasons why we do what we do, and why don't you just, people, why don't you just buy a new couch, or why don't you just not care, or why don't you just, you know what I mean, all those sorts of things, and like, well, if I had a magic wand, we wouldn't be friends. Well, I don't say that to you, but I say it to other people. If I had a magic wand, we wouldn't be talking right now.
There was a moment when my daughter's mother / partner,
yeah,
was moving into her new house, and I sat with her and said, some of this furniture you are bringing from college.
Also known as the talk. I've had the talk numerous times from my lady friend.
We're now in our 40s.
Milk crates are for milk, not for shelves.
This was bad furniture, badly made, and inherited by you in a shared helping situation.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Time to put it into the stream. You know, time to get it out of your life and get into something else. And we had this conversation yesterday.
Time for it to go to Love Seat Heaven.
Go to Love Seat Heaven. But the conversation yesterday was the cookware conversation.
Oh, man. There are people who hang on to pots from college that are so gross.
Well, and that's what this was. We were trying to make some cheese sauce, and we needed a pot that was...
John, is there any chance that was for a school project? Is there any chance that all that was for a school project?
My daughter came to me the night before, last night, at 5 o'clock, and she said...
Do you mind sharing this with our listeners?
Said, Dad, there's a school project tomorrow. And I was like, okay, well, it's good that this is coming out at 5 and not at 9. And she said, we have to share something of our culture at school. And I was like, okay, we don't really have any dances as part of our culture. We don't have any native dances. We don't make
Do you want
any.
Me to wear the bathrobe and bring the scimitar?
There's no unleavened bread in our culture.
No, all leavened.
And I don't think she wants the scimitar at school. I think she's against it. And I was like, so what is your thing? And she said, cheesy biscuits.
Mm.
The Welsh rarebit that we make every Christmas morning. That was Nana's invention.
Mm-hmm.
Welsh rarebit, but with ham and on bisticks instead of toast. And I would like to take that to school.
You told me this anecdote earlier, and I just want to say, I've never wanted a cheesy ham bistic more than my entire freaking life than I do now.
I know.
Oh, my God, it sounds so good.
I was like, sweetie, this is a major undertaking, not just to make it.
It's not a Sunday night kind of thing.
Yeah, not just to make it, but to make it for 40 kids and schlep it to school in the morning? And she was like, well, that's what needs to get done. And I said, you know what? Let's just get it going. And we get the stuff. We go to the store. Cheesy Biscuits has there's not very many ingredients, so it's easy to buy the stuff. And we start making it. And I was like, you know, hey, you know, one of our family traditions is that I'm Bean Dad, so you're going to make it yourself, and I'm going to stand here and coach you. But when I tweet about it, I'm going to say I was working on a puzzle instead.
Oh, good for you.
And she said, okay. And so we
just steer clear at this point.
So we started making it. And the problem is that all of the pots at her mom's house are for shite.
And I bet they stick.
they stick.
Because I bet they were cheap. If they were like mine, I'm projecting here. The ones that my mom got for me at the Walmart on County Road 54 in the year 1986 were like the least expensive, quote unquote, you know, what do they call the kind that doesn't stick? What's that?
Yeah, non-stick.
Non-stick, but the cheapest in the world were like by the time you've scraped it with a spoon five times, which you're not supposed to do. You know what I mean?
No.
Oh my God, keeping that for over 5 years would be, forget it, everything's going to stick to that.
And these are slightly better, but they're definitely cost.
They're not Calphalon, I'm guessing.
No, they're not. They're Costco brand. And they just have
Kirkland's finest pants.
Kirkland's pants from 1992. And so we're sitting there, and the thing is that that my my daughter's mother/partner is like your spouse, a fancy lady.
Yep,
she's a fancy lass, and she's all the time at the Le Creuset outlet looking at little, I don't know, muffin warmers or whatever those things are. She never buys anything.
It's just bullshit we've got for making coffee. It's fucking ridiculous. We have like a gooseneck fancy water heater. I'm like, what was wrong with my Cuisinart with Rust? That was a great Cuisinart that I had with Rust. That thing will boil. That'll boil water like fucking ringing a bell. Your little thing
Rust
with
probably
the
added
goose,
a lot of iron
it's
to your
fine.
Diet.
I've cleaned it with espresso machine cleaner. It's fine. But you get the gooseneck thing and you're like, it's like an eighth of an ounce of water. That's exactly 211 degrees and it takes up all this space. But like, that doesn't mean you necessarily got rid of all of Kirkland's finest. Still some Kirkland hanging around.
We're standing in the kitchen and I'm like, weren't you going to get, when you moved into this house, weren't you going to get all clad? Weren't you going to get rid of all these pans and get clads?
Yeah.
And she was like, I was, but that shit's expensive, yo. And I was like, I know it is, but here we are burning the cheese sauce in your Kirkland pots. There's got to be a better way. And then a British guy came in and said, listen to the pan.
Yeah.
But I for sure had a moment where I thought, oh no, there are people, certainly people in the world who would kill for these Kirkland pans.
There's people in the world that would kill for a white 5 gallon bucket.
Yeah, and in the classic formulation where I turn to my daughter and say, you should be grateful for this burned cheese. Some people wouldn't even have the burn.
Daddy, don't make me tap the can of beans.
I'm sitting on the couch. I don't want to live, as you and I both don't want to live in a place where we are defined by our possessions. We don't want to spend money that we don't have to on dumb stuff. Mm-hmm. We don't want to be caught in this capitalist gyre as the ship sinks on the shoals. But I also don't want to burn the cheese sauce and I got a spot on my couch and I don't know the difference.
Was there a part of you that almost like ran out to sur la table? Or was a part of you that was like, I should just run out and get a nice pot?
No, because that shit's expensive, yo.
That shit's expensive, yo. Yeah.
And I just spent $80 on a 1982 chorus pedal that I really thought
brand?
I needed.
What brand? Is it Ibanez?
This is the problem. Have I been talking to you about this?
No.
I went down and I was like, oh, I got to clean out my storage space. And I found all the Tupperware bins full of effects pedals from over the years.
Mm-hmm.
And as you recall, being an indie rocker in the early 90s, as you were, that was at a time when effects pedals had no special hold over anybody. They weren't boutique. They weren't expensive.
If you're somebody like Charles and the Wrens, or like, the guy from Sugar who played with Michael Shannon at that REM show. But like people who have like three rows of pedals, that was not very cool. Like, you know what was cool? Like my friend Steven had two different distortion pedals because he had one that was in a Marshall half stack. And so he had like his pedal for regular distortion and then his squee pedals for like solos.
Yeah,
and that was it. There was no chorus pedal. There's no spring reverb. There's no digital delay. There's no Tom Scholz Rockman. There's none of that stuff. It's not very cool.
Because I was not punk rock, I had four pedals. I had the pedal that
Oh man.
Made it louder.
Yeah.
The line boost, right? It just made it louder. And then I had the pedal that added distortion. And if you ran the one that made it louder into the distortion one, it made it louder, double louder and distorted. And then I had a compressor pedal.
Oh, wow. The integrity of your signal chain.
Yeah.
Wow. I've never seen a non-jazz or prog person that interested in the signal before it reaches the amp and not necessarily dirty.
That's
fascinating. Right. Did you have an equalizer too?
Well, because and I did have
an equalizer. Did you have a cheap? No, it was because of a cheap amp.
I had a Boss. I had a Boss equalizer.
How many? Five?
It was five channel, right? And eventually somebody came out with a seven channel, and I was like, that's too many channels. But you know, my tone was always loud and clean. I mean, it was a little distorted, but mostly
overdriven. Clean. That's the thing. And that's if you get a tube amp and it's overdriven, it's really nice. It's not distorted, it's overdriven.
Overdrive.
Yeah.
Well, but at that time, people were always handing you pedals. The number of times that somebody handed me a pedal and said, hey, do you want this? And it was always some kind of pedal that nobody wanted. Some sort of octave pedal or a chorus or flanger or phaser.
If you're not Neil Young, your use of octave pedals should be a little circumspect. Unless you like playing slow guitar solos, your octave pedal's going to sound really weird.
Well, and maybe Jack White, right? Jack White can get away with all
that. Sure, yeah, yeah, yeah.
But so I pulled out this bin, a couple of bins, and I laid them all out on the floor. I had 80 effects pedals.
No.
80.
Were there any where you were like, there must have been some where you were, let me just guess. There were a bunch where you were like, but there were some where you were like, holy God, I don't remember owning that. That must have been late. And then there must have been at least one where you're like, I have no idea that I owned this.
Oh, there were plenty of those, right? Really? Like at what point, and the problem was.
By the way, I have three Ibanez choruses.
I never bought any of them. I had a practice space. And I shared it with a bunch of bands.
By
the Richard Hugo house. And people would just toss all these modulating pedals and the distortion pedals where the battery didn't work anymore. Like there was no, they were all $20.
Again, where we were using earlier, accumulated.
Yeah.
You accumulated pedals. You didn't seek pedals per se, right? But somehow they ended up, how do you put this intransitively? Pedals ended up in your world.
They ended up in my world. And for a while in the 2000s, I was good friends with Susie Matthews, who was the daughter of the man who started Electroharmonix.
No.
And at some point, she said, I'm going to make you an Electroharmonix dealer.
Did they make a Big Muff? Or was that
They made the Big Muff, yeah.
Oh, my God. Their pedals, the form factor of their pedals in the 70s was so cool.
Incredible,
right? It all looked like stuff that like Captain Kirk would use.
That's right. And so once I was a dealer, she would send me all this stuff. Like, oh, hey, check out this Deluxe Memory, man. It's a. It turned out it had a scratch.
Is that a digital delay?
Analog
delay? Oh, that's so cool! Oh my God!
And it's got it had a scratch in the paint, so we can't sell it. So anyway, here you go.
Wow.
Anyway, I get these 80 pedals out. I spread them all over. I'm looking at them, and what? A normal person who had an eBay store, which is live as of this moment, BTW.
You should make an ad and I'll put it in.
A normal person would say, I'm going to put 75 of these pedals for sale somewhere. I'm either going to take them to the guitar store and sell them or I'm going to put them online and sell them. But what I did was I looked at them and said, I have every DOD pedal from 1982.
Whoa, you make a flight.
Except,
like an omakase pedal table.
That's right. Except for the flanger and the
flanger, EQ. You could sell it as a set.
Well, so
all you need to do is buy a new pedal.
Instead of getting rid of them, I went on eBay and I'm like, I got to get that flanger.
Oh no, you actually did that?
I did it.
I don't blame you at all.
Now. Down in my studio, I no longer have 80 pedals. I have 90 pedals.
Well, that happens sometimes. Because, I mean, a pendulum swing, right?
That's right.
You go one direction and eventually you hope it comes back.
Because I needed not only the DoD Digitex, but I needed a couple of MXRs. I needed a couple of Boss, a couple of Ibanez.
Do you know what that does to the value of the collection if you break it up? Nobody buys one fork.
Oh.
Right? No, I'm saying, no, I'm saying you did the right thing. You're investing. You're investing in your future, the way I look at it.
That's what I'm doing. You're right. I'm investing in my future.
You're investing in your future. Don't be simple. Yeah.
You're so right, because now that I have the whole line of DoD pedals, it probably doubled in value. Where else are you going to get it? I did the work.
That's
for
a good
you.
Question.
I did the $20. I delivered your food for you for $20.
I'm not selling you a pedal. I'm selling you part of my life.
That's right. I'm selling you the time.
I'm selling you my attention. I'm selling you my curation. Right?
My curation.
Yeah.
That's right. I'm selling you my knowledge. Experience,
yes.
My strength, my hope.
Yeah. Look, save some for yourself.
Well,
yeah.
What it all boils down to, like all buying things, is that what I should be doing is working on finishing these songs I'm writing.
Oh, well, that's a different area of your work.
Well, it is, but the problem is that whenever I sit down and go, oh boy, these songs are hard to write, I go, you know what? I should go look and see if my bid on that DoD flanger is still winning.
Well, it's hard to get focus when you're on the quote-unquote
creative. It feels
like
the same work, right? It feels like the same family.
John, you're doing the right thing.
I appreciate that. You're so supportive.
No, dude, I've been trying to put together a thing. I'm not really quite sure where to begin for a variety of reasons. All you need to know is that I like printing things on a 3D printer, and I had this idea of trying to put together the idea of this being very practical of like, hey, if you've got the kind of printer I've got, here's some stuff to know. Like, you know, and there's those classic things you kind of wish that somebody in your life would tell you about a thing that's new to you. Like, here's the things to always do. Here's the things to never do. Well, that's 0.5% of it. Here's the thing, you know what I'm saying? Like, there are very few things you should never do, and there are relatively few things you should always do, and the art is figuring out what falls in between. Everything else, if you like.
So this is part of a community building that you're doing, because you're communicating.
I put stuff up and on a public site sometimes where I'll like share things with people. And anyway, I really struggle with it. The less interesting reason is that like I don't want to get into tech support, and I'm not your dad, so like I don't want to like try and say go do it my way. I love giving context for like good decision making and like where opportunities are for learning versus where opportunities are for just doing it until it makes sense. Because you can waste a lot of time and money in life and attention and love and everything by not realizing that you're pushing a rock that's never going to love you. But I thought about trying to do that, but like it is sort of difficult to do because everybody's on their own journey for that stuff. But like the idea, one of the things that's on the list that's somewhere on that spectrum, it's somewhere between never do this and always do this. It's closer to the never do this is before you buy more toys for your toys, consider exploiting what you already have, or if you like leveraging what you already have, like use up the filament you've already got before you buy a new filament. And like, oh, why? Okay, well, I can explain it to you, but just take it on the strength. Well, why? Okay. Because you really want to try carbon fiber. I understand that. You really want to try carbon fiber PLA. But here's the thing. What kind of nozzle do you have? I don't know. Well, okay, if you have a brass 0.2 nozzle, which I don't know if they even make, but well, think about it this way. Like if you had, just because you
I mean, what kind of nozzle do you have is a great question
you want a lot. You want a steel, larger bore nozzle. Otherwise, it's going to get all gummed up and you just wasted $34.
There you go.
12 string, why I mentioned to you last week, talking about, Tom Peterson and his 12 string bass. Like, okay, but here's the thing. A 12 string bass is not a 12 string guitar. You don't buy a set of 12 string guitar strings and put it on your bass because those are different things. You don't even buy two sets of 6 string because it's a bass. It's different. I can't even get into the ballpark of explaining to you because, and I'm giving it to you here in Pigs and Bunnies, but you know the kind of thing I'm talking about, which is like, if you knew even roughly what the answer to that question was, you would never ask it because you know that it kind of doesn't make sense. I want to be the kind person who goes, well, just so you know, like, don't spend a ton of time on buying new stuff until you've really made good use of what you've got. And maybe instead of trying to think about a new filament you could buy to make new stuff on your new, maybe instead think about like, is there anything where you can sharpen the saw? like I was trying to explain this to my wife, like how when I do 3D printing stuff, which is of zero interest to her, I was like, there are functional things that I make, and there are fun things that I make, and there are things that I make just to learn something, but they all feed into each other. When I make something that's fun, it also ends up teaching me something, all kinds of things. You can apply this to so many things. Just think about cutting your lawn. Think about how much you learn about order of operations, about weather, about all these different things. Like, there's a million things where you have so much domain expertise about something and you don't know how you got it. But like, I make something fun, and in making something fun, I learn a lot. I learn, quote unquote, learn. That's the second part. And then with that learning, I can make something functional. And when I make something functional, that makes me more confident to go make something fun, and the music goes round. So I'd love to just say to somebody, well, never put metal or carbon fiber or filament into your printer unless you know you've got the right kind of nozzle. I mean, it already says that in the manual. You don't need another person like yelling at you. But here's one. No matter who you are with a 3D printer, if you're new to it, start by making small things that don't take a lot of filament or a lot of time. Because no matter what printer you've got, getting it done faster is nice. And then you can decide, did it turn out the way you wanted? Okay, so how about the something else? Well, the something else is either I make this tiny thing that's really not that complicated and I know I can pull it off, or something else. Well, if that something else is, I try to print a bowling ball at full density and then I just walk away and hope it turned out okay, you're going to be so bummed. And you're going to waste $29 worth of filament before it runs out, realizing you never should have tried to make a bowling ball. That's not in your remit yet. You got over your skis, and you didn't understand how to keep, you know what I'm saying? And like with effects pedals, sometimes less is more. I'm saying, John, everything is related. And
what's interesting about getting one of everyone is that what I've done, stay with me,
what I've done,
is that I've made pedal boards that are brand exclusive.
Ooh.
But now I have
All DOD,
MXR,
right?
An all DOD, an all Boss, an all Ibanez, an all Maxon, an all Electro Harmonics. And so the reason that I pursued this is because I thought that the discipline of only using MXR pedals that they could, that first of all, when they were designed, they were probably designed to interact with each other.
Right.
Because the designers
Generally you sell, like back in the day anyway, with private, like local music stores, they may not have everything by everybody. They might have, this is a dumb distinction probably, but if they're going to buy a new brand of guitars, is it Gibson or is it Fender? It could be, but it's more likely Ibanez or Peavey. Because that's what they could afford to have in stock to still have a range of things. If they buy one Les Paul custom, that obviates the ability to pay for it. You know what I'm saying? So you might have, like, you might have a coked up DOD salesman that you really like. You know what I'm saying? Isn't that kind of how it works? And then you could say, well, yeah, these for me, I was an Ibanez guy. I didn't know any better. But like all these Ibanez pedals, you know, they work fine together. They all got the same quarter inch jack, right? Uh-huh. Isn't that though? Like you might end up accumulating. I think with PV, it was really like that. All our heavy, all our equipment is very heavy and rarely breaks by PV. That's right. Well, you ever play a PV bass or guitar?
Sure.
They're so, in my experience, they're so heavy.
Over-engineered is what they were.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Built like a brick shit house, man.
And the thing is that those things, you know, people looked down their noses at them for a long time.
I know, but they're probably still playing them.
They're totally rad. They're totally rad.
Oh, how's your Galen Kruger?
The thing about the pedal board people is, you know, they spend so much time and energy and mental energy. And I'm saying this as somebody that's on eBay right now looking at, you know, Digitech Blanchard.
I am currently in a graphics application making show art, and it's a picture of a big muff.
There it is. But, you know, the thing about it is that to have a pedal board that is restricted by brand is as much a disciplining limitation as anything I could think of.
Hmm.
You know, it's like, I can't.
Oh, no, I won't buy, no matter how much this other nice one is, I'm not going to buy that because I'm restricting myself to like these.
Well, that, and also like, I could combine these pedals in a literally infinite number of ways, but instead I'm not going to. You know, I went to see Prince at a club a few years ago, like a small club, and he was still alive.
Yeah.
He had an all Boss pedal board, which are, within the pedal board weirdos, considered like the most basic, the most normie mm-hmm. sex pedals. And Prince had like 9 Boss pedals.
They weren't always like the most subtle. Like I had one that would make feedback when you press the pedal down. Like they were kind of like a lot of Boss pedals were very durable pedals for teenagers.
Yeah, that's right. And that's all Prince used.
Wow.
And I walked away from that going, okay, well, there's a lot you can learn there, which is...
That little guy made a lot of sound with those.
Yeah, and he could go into any music store in the world and find a replacement for his Tube Screamer, or I'm sorry, his Blues Driver.
Yeah.
And
I had a Tube Screamer, and I've been a Tube Screamer, yeah.
Everybody had a Tube Screamer and a Blues Driver.
Oh, my God. We do that little pick thing with the pick and like a little bit of your thumb. Oh, my God.
But so that was another one of these where I was like, oh, right, maybe I should think about this less, not more. What I really need is a line boost, a distortion, a compressor, and a delay. I just have all these flangers, and I've only used a flanger twice in my life.
I was just gonna say, like, if you have a flanger and a chorus, you better be Robert Smith.
Well, that's right. I mean, in Medicine Cabinet Pirate, you can hear a flanger, but other than that,
oh yeah, it's real deep, right?
Yeah,
super deep. I do remember that. Yeah, yeah,
and that was like some very old 1970s Ibanez flying pan type of thing that I wouldn't never should have gotten
rid of. I wouldn't use that more than 5 or 6 times on the same album.
Well, no, that's right. Or, you know, like, are you going to schlep that around? And probably it's worth $1,500
now, too. Yeah, again, so unless you're Neil Young, maybe you get one song with vocoder. We don't need vocoder on all the songs.
And, you know, and basically my phone could probably do it. I could hook up my phone to all my guitars and it would make every sound in history.
Via Wi-Fi, yeah.
Yeah, via Wi-Fi. That's right. Yeah. I don't even have to touch the guitar. No, I just have a guitar. It's on the stand.
They'll do that.
Don't even look at it.
Don't look at it. Come on. Nobody looks at their guitar anymore. Unless they're trying to see where the chord goes. That's a fascinating idea. Well, where is it? Where are things right now with your eBay process or like with these things? Well, let me put it this way. Because a theme through a lot of this has been like you say, consumerism. So, yeah. Like as you sit here today on your filthy couch, I'm so sorry.
It's okay.
What are you thinking about today? What's the way forward, John?
My second eBay round just went live as this show was airing, or as this show was recording, because I programmed it to go.
That's why you spilled your coffee, right?
That's right. I programmed it to go. And it was so hard to get it all done. It's just a lot of work. I didn't realize how much work it was to post anything on eBay.
Yeah.
But I'm really into it, like not the money, but the selling, because the problem is the stuff has stacked up all these years, but I care about everything, right? I care about these effects pedals and I care about these jackets. And I have put some of myself into them somehow.
Absolutely.
And it's like you have with a lot of stuff. Like, I have knowledge about
this. I feel the way about, I said this on something I wrote the other day, the playlist that I make.
Yes, exactly.
I think I said it here last Monday. Hello. I said, it's not just 7 songs, it's 7 little pieces of my heart. Because, like, there's so much of different parts of my life in every one of those decisions that then I have to really kind of, rethink, but like I have to think about like, oh, is it that or that? And do I really like that song? Is that a good song for an introduction? Or is that really just one that I like because I was already a super fan? And it's like, I get that, whether that is a suit jacket or a Tube Screamer, I totally get that. There's a little bit. They're little Horcruxes. They've got a little bit of you.
Horcruxes, exactly. Yeah. And
you ever heard that SoundCloud rapper, Lil Horcrux? You ever heard him? Anyway,
by putting them online to sell, and by I think the act of selling them too, I get to hold them. I get
it's
to
like a Viking
think about
funeral,
them.
Kind of. Yeah.
Yeah. Well, I look at them and I see them again, and I try them on again. And I go, okay, now I'm gonna turn you out into the world, and I'm gonna tell your story a little bit as you go, so you won't be forgotten, little guy. Like, spread your wings and fly.
Mm-hmm.
Like what it does is because what I'm trying to do is have fewer voices speaking to me every time I walk past a closet.
Mm-hmm.
Like, I walk past a closet and there's 15 jackets in there that are like, do you remember me? Hello? Do you remember when you found me?
I bet
me
some of them talk London? Like that. Some of them just go, yeah. And I bet some of them go, hey, buddy. Like, I bet there's all different. It's not even one kind of voice, right?
No, no, no. Some of them are just like,
it isn't like even like, yep, like, all different. Yeah.
Yeah. And some of them are like, telephone, I worked telephone. For John F. Kennedy. And, you know, like, and so I don't, there's too many of those. I'm just sitting here in the living room looking around and everything is talking.
Yeah.
And so I really like it. And it's not about, I'm trying to make any money and it's not
even. It's okay about, that that's like, part of it. But for you to have a component of that that goes beyond just that mercantile thing will probably also improve your chances of being able to sell it, which is a nice thing.
Yeah, maybe. But it's definitely a it's definitely like, it's more of a process than I have words to describe. It's not just like, I'm going to put these things online. It's like, it's not only that I'm reliving my relationship with them, but I'm also trying to analyze why I have a relationship with them.
Wow. Oh, that can be time consuming. You got to be careful.
Well, it's a lot of time. That's right. Yeah. And so it takes me hours.
You got time to think about it while you're stuffing envelopes and whatnot.
I guess so. You know, it's like you were saying, is this worth $20 to have somebody else do?
Yeah, right.
Except that no one else could do it. No one else could put this stuff up the way that I'm doing it. And it wouldn't help me the way it feels like it's helping me, but maybe it's crazy. I'm just sorting
the nuts getting
and
rid
bolts,
of stuff
you know?
At the end of the day, regardless of the path to get there, it can be a very good thing. If it's something that got stolen because you were asleep, that sucks. But if it's something that you chose to sort of let go of, you know, like you're like letting go of the little, they're just holding on to the leg of the butterfly and let it go. Like that's just some, there can be something very, very nice about that, but it is still all work is work.
Do you get rid of things?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
How do you get rid of them?
I mean, honestly,
50% of all things, you just go in the room and you're like,
well, honestly, I mean, like this is a very long story. The short answer is, trips to the dump. We're like sometimes with the car and sometimes we've rented a truck because it's like we've just got too much stuff and it's got to go. And, you know, as much as you say like, okay, I've got this beautifully sealed tub of baby clothes. Yeah, well, let me just swipe all the mouse poop off the top of that beautifully sealed. Because like, no, we don't have a wing of the house for storage. We have a garage and it's gross. Right. And like, I don't think we're helping. Let me ask you this. When you realize you're going to have a baby, would you want somebody giving you a big Tupperware full of full of extremely tiny white shirts with poop on the top? No, because that's part of the fun of, you know, when you do that is you go out and you get your own stuff. Like, right. But like, there's that stuff.
Do you know when our baby was born, we had a family that we didn't know. They were. It was the sister of a friend of a friend who had two girls. One of them was 1 year older than our daughter, and one of them was 2 years older.
Oh, so it's still fresh. Those Ramones onesies are still warm.
And the thing was, they were affluent people.
Mm.
And
so they also
whatever
had Vampire
reason,
Weekend onesies, probably.
Well, no, but they weren't hip. They were from Bellevue. And they were just people that shopped at the expensive store for kids. And we just got, before the baby was born, I have a picture.
Store for kids is funny
because
it does because sound like a store. Where are you guys getting the crib? Oh, we're going to the expensive store for kids.
We're going
to the expensive store
for kids.
That's so good. Well, we got the swingy thing our kid hates there. Yeah.
There's the middle stores for kids. And then there's always the one that's like, oh, wow, this little Lord Fauntleroy suit is really... So before the baby was even born, you know, because Ari and I weren't married.
Right.
And we weren't clear what was going to happen.
That's
we
a
were
lot,
talking
that's
all
a lot
the time.
To work out.
Yeah. What are we going to do? How's this going to go? And I remember very distinctly when she was about 6 or 7 months pregnant, we got 4 giant bins, infant clothes. Jesus. And we sat in my living room.
And you have to say thank you. And this is so special. Thank you so much.
But we didn't know them. These were strangers to us.
That's the thing. Well, I mean, like, again, it's like when the person, like in the old joke from the 90s, it's like when the Greenpeace person hands you the pamphlet and goes, here, now you throw this away. That's when you give somebody stuff like that, it is a burden. That is not a gift. Well, that is a burden.
Well, except in our case, it was a bonding.
Oh, really?
She and I sat in the living room and we took out all these.
Sorry, I sound awful now. I apologize.
And all these little t-shirts and all these little pants. And the ones that were too soiled, we put them away. And the ones that had clearly never been worn or, you know, we put them over here. And the ones that said Nike on them, we put them in the to-go. And the ones that said, I'm a little cutums, we put in the keeps. And there, we had so much of it. We could give away half of it, which, because I was a thrift store devotee, I was on my way there anyway.
Yeah.
And then we had this pile of effectively brand new rich people baby clothes.
That is nice. Especially because at a certain age, the problem is the kid grows so fast. So if you buy them the Ramones shirt or whatever, like there's a pretty good chance if you buy them for somebody as a present, the kid will never wear it. They have more clothes than they need for the first month. And then they just rip through sizes so fast, especially with shoes, right? Like you cannot keep up. But if somebody wants to, Matt Howey said something to me when he knew Madeline was pregnant. He said, just so you know, learn from me. Matt said, what you need is a bunch of diapers and some diapers and some onesies. And like, but you don't need all the stuff you think you need. And if you try to plan ahead too much in that regard, is what I learned, is like, well, yeah, but you bought all this stuff or you got all this stuff. And it's like, yeah, but like what I really need is, I'm sorry to say, I need more diapers in a larger size. What I really, you know what I mean? Like there's all that stuff where you're like, and you just accumulate. Do you remember what it used to require to like go to the art museum, let alone go on a plane? All the gear for all that stuff. Anyways, so did you take it, the leftovers, to the thrifteria?
Well, what happened was that this family decided that we were the place that they were going to get rid of their stuff.
Oh.
And for the first 8 years of our daughter's life, every time she was about to bump out of her clothes, we would, because they had two daughters.
You really got the timing right on that, didn't you?
We would get five or six bins, and we would go, we would sit together, the two of us, and we would go through them and go, we'd take half of it and say, no, this is either it's been used too much or it's uncool. And then the half that was like, this is cute or this is brand new and cute, we would keep. And we effectively dressed our daughter from the beneficence of these rich strangers all the way until she was eight. And it turned out that both of those girls were total sporto jocks. And at 8 years old,
More wearing pink stuff at that point?
Well, Marla was like she was on her way to being a little goth.
Okay.
And more the clothes stopped being cute and started being like,
yeah, she's got, you know, like, she's got opinions and taste at that point.
Well, yeah. And the t-shirts they were giving us were like, Mia Hamm is the greatest. And Marla's like, what is that? I want something
I don't want
dying
clothes
bird
that require
on
me
it.
Reading Wikipedia.
And so eventually, because those girls are now grown or they're in high school,
yeah,
like they're not giving away bins of their clothes anymore.
So you had to really pick up the slack.
It ended right when it needed to end. And we probably saved $50,000 by either buying her only clothes from thrift stores or getting these six bins every 6 months. And of course, you know, we sent everything back into the chain too, you know, all the stuff that was still clean or still nice or cute.
It's a form of sartorial composting.
Yeah. Right.
Yeah. Hakuna Matata, right?
We sow the seed. Nature grows the seed.
Yes.
And then we eat the seed.
Okay. Yeah. That's a good system, but, you know, I don't know. I was fancy. Madeline was fancy. And I was like, I don't really want a whole lot of used clothes. But
yeah, I mean,
it's fine. The kid's just going to shit and sleep. It's fine. Like, right. Yeah.
You can just wrap them in a blanket, but. I mean, all I wear is used clothes. Everything I own is used clothes. Sometimes when I put this stuff online, I'm like, yeah, this has a repair done to it that was already in it when I bought it 30 years ago. And I have no way of telling you about this repair, except that I've studied it extensively.
Like, but, where you get like a preemptive patch or something, like something where like you can, the elbows on this can last a little longer if I get this before it gets to, you know what I'm talking about, before it gets threadbare, I can like save this, that kind of thing.
This jacket has lived at least one adventure-filled life before it even met me.
Oh, man.
And then I, and that might, it might have had two adventure-filled lives before it met me. And now I have lived an adventure-filled life with it. And now here it comes to you. And I can't tell you where that button went because that button was missing when I got it. And, you know, and I sewed on a flattened peso. Wow.